You're right.
You know, just looking at your stuff, I don't know where to put my eyes first. It's just...
It's a feast for the eyes. It's a veritable feast.
It just grows every time. At a rapid speed, too.
Not really. I don't know what...
None of this was there.
You sure? Perhaps the setup in the way it was, but I've had this stuff.
I did not see the Mickey, the Minnie, the Skeletor, the Doctor Who, My Little Pony.
Well, I've got the new Master Universe, He-Man, She-Ra, Hordak, and Skeletor replicas.
Yeah, that's new. The Chewbacca is new.
Yeah, that Chewbacca does all sorts of shit.
The BB-8 Lego is new.
What about this poster over here? I got that at the $5 store.
Are you checking off what you're going to buy off that poster?
No, because that's the original line.
See, you're happy. You can't afford that on your salary? Huh?
Welcome to Pop Culture Man, children. PCMC, I'm Mike Bongiorno. I'm here joined in my basement with the OG, the Zen Master, the Sultan of Swing.
Swarth. There you go.
Mr. Emilio James Sparks.
And according to our one fan, Rito.
Yeah.
The vegan demon.
The vegan demon.
Yeah. I like that.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that.
Because, you know, vegan usually doesn't go with demon. You know what I mean?
No, it don't.
You're really changing that sort of stereotype.
Yes, sir.
How have you been?
I'm good, man. I literally just got out of the yoga.
Oh, man. I could tell because your aura's got a nice purple right now.
I'm feeling very nice right now.
Yeah, your third eye is right open. Ready to go.
It's nice and big.
Ready to podcast.
It's throbbing. It's ready to go.
I could see it twitching a little bit.
A little twitchy.
Well, you're here on a good day because there's so much shit going on in the world.
Well, what's going on?
Well, for one thing, Netflix won't film in North Carolina.
Why is that? Because it's a beautiful state.
I don't think they have a problem with the bucolic nature of North Carolina. I believe their problem
taxes?
Is... No, I believe... Taxes. Do you think money is a...
Yeah, they don't care.
Do you think money is a fucking thing to them? No, it turns out that North Carolina has had a controversial legislation wherein... What is it? I'm reading here from the reporter Brian Elise... Sandberg. North Carolina's controversial legislation is impacting Hollywood's decision to film in the state. Netflix has opted to film its upcoming North Carolina set series, OBX, a coming-of-age drama set in a fictional town, in South Carolina. Instead, due to the remnants of North Carolina's anti-LGBTQ House Bill number 2, best known as the Bathroom Bill. The law requires transgender people to use public restrooms that correspond to the sex on their birth certificate. The legislation first drew criticism when it was enacted in 2016. So even though that this program takes place in North Carolina...
It's going to be filmed in South Carolina?
Absolutely.
So one cackalack is being used instead of the other cackalack?
Yes.
But why, though? What's the reason? Is it because of, like, they're taking a stance politically?
Yes. Yeah, they're like we're not going to film in a state. We find your state to be bigoted.
I like that.
And we're not going to film there.
We're going to take our millions of dollars in revenue for your state and give it to South Carolina.
Exactly.
Where
exactly.
Everybody can pee in any bathroom.
Wherever you want to piss.
I like that.
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
At one of the places... Thanks.
Yo! Yeah.
It'd be great if you said no, and you're like, well, that was the show.
I would never say no. I'm in your house, sitting in one of your chairs.
At one of my many jobs, there is a... get comfortable, recline. In one of my many jobs, there is a...
bathroom?
I don't know what you'd call it. It's a bathroom that doesn't have a sex. It's a unisex bathroom.
Yeah.
It's a non-gendered bathroom.
Like the one in your home.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But there's not numerous people in my home that are going at the same time. But it's not chaos. You know, I'll go in and I'll go to a urinal and I'll pee. And then I'll hear someone peeing in the stall. And then it'll be a lady and she'll come out and wash her hands.
Yeah.
And she'll go, hello, sir. And I'll go, lovely to see you. Good day. And she didn't rape me. I didn't rape her.
Yeah, that's good.
Nobody went, ew.
Yeah.
And, you know, the world didn't, you know, I think some people think that if people with penises use the bathroom with the dress on it, that much like Thanos snapping, the world will, half the world will turn to dust and everything will be done.
Honestly, the women's bathrooms, a lot more cleaner.
Mm-hmm.
I like to go in those to do my duty.
Yeah.
Not gonna lie. Also, when I was big into DJing nightclubs and going to nightclubs.
Yeah.
Specifically when it was, before it was Pasha, it was Sound Factory. And even at Pasha.
Somebody knows what you're talking about.
There was a club in New York City, a popular dance club.
I think
club,
I've heard of Sound Factory.
Where all the kids would go and cut a rug.
Yes.
They would do the
Charleston.
Yeah, they would do the 23 Skidoo.
You guys know Hucklebuck?
Yeah, they would definitely do the Hucklebuck to Jonathan Peters dance music.
JP, bro.
Going through it, bro. Great song. There was unisex bathrooms.
And why not?
And there was no, now, I don't know if any hooskadoo was happening. I don't know if they were necking in the bathroom.
But you know what? There's necking going on in every bathroom.
There's necking going on everywhere. I mean, you know
what
I mean?
Yeah.
I know I was introduced to the idea of doing my business in a unisex bathroom in a nightclub atmosphere, and I didn't think anything of it. I was like, well, I have to pee because I got to go DJ.
Right.
So I'm just going to go pee in this bathroom and then wash my hands next to a woman who's washing her hands.
Exactly.
And that's completely fine.
As the book says, everybody poops. So
sometimes
I think everybody
poops a lot sometimes. Something in your colon is telling you.
I think it'd be better for the world if we all just accepted that we all pee.
I think so. Yeah. It'd be nice just to actually just hold hands and say, I pee, you pee. Let's go pee together.
We all pee.
You should pee.
Other Netflix story. Netflix is getting sued.
For what?
Not by North Carolina.
Oh.
By the publishers of Choose Your Adventure books. Because their new movie, I don't know if you checked this out. There's a new movie for the television program Black Mirror. And it's called Banter Snatch. And it's a choose your own adventure thing. So as you're watching on Netflix, it asks you different to make decisions. So if I watch the movie,
has been a huge thing on the Twitter.
Yeah, if I make different decisions than you, we'll have a different movie. I haven't watched it yet because it seems like a gimmick to me that I'm not that interested in.
Yeah, I don't want that responsibility.
But apparently, ChooseCo, clever name, publisher of the Choose Your Own Adventures books, filed a lawsuit against Netflix. Because apparently Netflix went to them, was like, can we use the name? And ChooseCo said no. And Netflix said, okay. And then they just did anyway. Although they don't use the name in the show, because in the movie, within the movie, the kid's making a Choose Your Own Adventure type movie.
Yeah.
Okay. It's exhausting just talking about it.
Yeah, this is...
So he says it's like Choose Your Own Adventure, which is he's referring to a cultural artifact.
Yeah.
And they were like, well, you said the name, so we're going to sue you.
Choose Your Own?
Yeah.
Choose Your Own has been around before ChooseCo.
I think ChooseCo is saying we are the inventors of these books. And if you want to even utter something that sounds like the title of our...
you can't even say the word ch.
Yeah, no. So, yeah, in the first few minutes of the film, the protagonist refers to a fictional book in the diegesis as, quote, Choose Your Own Adventure. So there's a lawsuit there.
Yeah, but do they own the intellectual property of Choose Your Own Adventure?
They own it as a title. But
yeah,
I don't
but if you're
see
saying
how,
it, though.
Right. I don't see how
you get what I mean?
Yeah.
How can they have their panties in a bunch if...
How can it hurt them? Here's the thing.
Yeah, that's what
are
I
the damages?
Know.
It could do nothing except maybe help your ancient brand. It's certainly not going to hurt you. You're certainly not losing revenue because
you might get more revenue.
Right. And how do you even prove that, you know, there's who knows what the fuck the revenue is for Netflix? So how do you even prove that somehow they owe you damages?
Do you remember on CTV?
Seems like a stunt.
There used to be
CTV, Staten Island's own community cable television. Access. Yeah.
Do you remember there used to be this weird thing that used to air all the time where you would actually interact and choose your own?
Yes. Yes. It was awful.
Did you ever play that?
What do you do? Yes, I have. And you would do it with like a landline, wouldn't you?
Yeah, we did it. And like it would be weird too because they would ask you the next question and the person's voice would always be like this creepy, what do you do? I'm like, I don't know.
It was super, yeah, it was like the 90s.
And then if you do like, if you choose something wrong, they make up this big, you died.
But there was also like, I remember, maybe I'm thinking of, didn't they also have like a trivia test, like a trivia game?
Yes, they did.
Where they'd be like, but it'd be like A, B,
B, C.
And it'd be, it was so unriveting.
Yeah.
Well.
See, you don't see CTV suing Netflix.
No.
Who is probably ahead of the curve before Choosy Choose.
What's the point, Choose Co? Get it right. Oh, pay the price.
I don't want to get sued.
Yeah. Oh, shit. Can we get sued?
I think we could.
First Amendment. First Amendment is a parody.
Freedom of speech.
First Amendment. That's how the First Amendment works, right? You just say it.
You just say it.
First Amendment.
I got rights, First Amendment.
Speaking of rights.
Segway right. King.
I know. I'm honestly, I'm the fucking
baby driver of Segways.
Sure, we'll go with that. I was trying to think of, oh, I wanted to say Walter Winchell. I'm the fucking Walter Winchell of podcast segues.
Wow. That's a Google reference, kids.
Walter Winchell. Anyway, so do you know who Star Wars Theory is? That's a man, Star Wars Theory.
No. Do you?
I do. I have a whole news story about him.
Okay.
All right. So Star Wars Theory is the name of a man.
Oh, okay.
And that's because it's a YouTube handle, and when you become a popular YouTuber, you just become the name of your channel.
Yeah.
So Star Wars Theory began as a fan channel talking about Star Wars shit.
Oh, that's got to be interesting.
It's actually not my favorite. I really like Star Wars Explained. Star Wars Explained is better than Star Wars Theory because that kid puts in the thorough research.
So you just get sucked in and then you go, no, this information is wrong.
I'm more a fan of Explained. Explained gives you a monthly canon update of I've read everything Star Wars. Let me fill you in on what's happening. Star Wars Theory, what this guy's up to, is he's trying to be creative now. So he made a Darth Vader fan film. Okay. I saw it. The internet went ablaze. Okay. The Star Wars Reddit and all of its mighty neckbeards were like, oh, ha, 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 ha. So much better than Rian Johnson's The Last Jedi.
Oh, my God.
I saw it.
How is the CGI?
It's lame. It's okay. That's the thing with fan films, which is, all fan films, all you have to do to be a quote-unquote cool fan film is you have to kind of be passable looking. You can't be chintzy looking. But nothing really happens in it. It's not cool. It's totally, it's about Darth Vader, which is like so fucking sick of Darth Vader and his pathos and shit like that. Anyway, he made this film and a lot of people liked it, especially like the neckbeards who were like, Disney doesn't know what they're doing. This guy should be... Blah, blah. All right. This guy gets hit with a fucking letter from Disney.
C&D.
No. They say, you can keep it up, and YouTube is going to monetize it.
We're going to take
all the money. I say,
suck on that, Star Wars Theory.
I say, fair trade. He does not. Star Wars Theory made a whole video where he was like, well, let me tell you what happened. I think this is fucked up because I'm a fan. Look, I'm a free idea man. I'm somebody who I'm not a very I am more of a proponent of the cultural commons concept rather than the copyright concept. I think everyone should be able to use each other's shit, but I also don't think that if your thing gets big enough and they go, we want the money that you're making from it now, I don't think you've been slighted.
No, because they own it. You did not create Darth Vader. Now, you can talk about it. You can pontificate about it. You can even express your discontent or love for something.
Right.
But you did not create it.
And
so you should not be able to reap the financial benefits of something that you do not own.
And I totally understand that perspective. I'm more, I'd say I'm even more liberal than you on this. I'm like, fine. You live in a world where we're full of Mickey Mouse's and Darth Vader's, and you're like, fuck it, why can't I use it? But Disney's not saying we have to remove this movie. Disney's just saying we're taking the money from it.
Because it's ours.
So, and I guess my problem is with this guy's sort of, with his sort of crybaby complaint video where he was like, he felt like he was jilted. Like, dude, you knew, you're a content creator, which I think he makes other things, right? So you know how this stuff works. You took one of the biggest licenses in popular culture and made your own thing against anybody and sunk your own money into it. Okay, and I think he spent like $80,000 or something.
His fault.
And he even said in his video, like, the money that I would have made back would have paid for it. Well, nobody would have told you to do it because who would have expected you to? If you so-called did this just because you love Star Wars and you're a fan and blah, 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 then good, you did it. Maybe now this heightens your profile and you do something else. I wouldn't go on the record of fuck Disney. I would try to parlay it into can I direct an episode of the Jon Favreau show coming up? Can I do anything? Thanks for not taking it down.
Could I parlay interviews with the cast of the next upcoming movies and maybe the director for my channel?
Yeah, let me do some Blu-ray extras.
Yeah, let me review the product.
Yeah.
So that way I could make back what I spent.
But no, he's like, how dare Disney do this?
See, this is where the internet capsizes and you drown. Because there is this false sense of entitlement. There is this false sense of, well, I put my work into this and now I've put my equity, my sweat equity into something. Yeah. And I've built...
Sweatwitty.
Yeah, I've built a off-brand of a major brand, so now you have to...
I'm Star Wars Theory.
Yeah. It's the same thing with, like, wrestling Twitter and, you know, all these wrestling...
How does that stuff work? Oh, by the way...
You can't
I apologize for the passing of me and Gene. I hope you're doing okay.
It hurt, but I appreciate when you texted me that morning of...
Tell me, how litigious is the WWE?
You cannot post. YouTube has a rule that you cannot monetize off professional wrestling unless it's a company that you created, like actual pro wrestling. So if an independent pro wrestling company wants to put their stuff on YouTube, they can possibly monetize for it. But analyzing clips of WWE or analyzing clips from New Japan Pro Wrestling or Beyond or AAW or all these other like subsequent wrestling promotions, you can't make money off that.
So what if, so do you make any money off WrestleRap? And if you did, how would you feel if WWE was like, we're going to take all that money?
Well, here's where they can't, because WrestleRap isn't doing any digital content that features.
Right. And the First Amendment allows for criticism.
Yes.
And so.
But you can't take the clips.
Okay. That's right. Yeah. It's not like this guy was just talking about Star Wars and got in trouble. He made a whole Star Wars movie.
You're not going to have. I am not. Or WrestleRap is not going to do a fan movie.
Right.
About the life of Vince McMahon.
Right.
We're not going to do that.
That sounds like you're just playing with.
You're just playing
with
fire.
You're just begging to be sued.
Yeah. So no, I'm not going to do that. Nor are we going to do fan fiction of Hulk Hogan's 85 title reign. We're not doing that.
Right.
Or a comic book of The Ultimate Warrior. You know.
Right.
But what WrestleRap does do is give a informative commentary about the human condition within professional wrestling as a fan.
Wow. So you're really doing the Lord's work over there.
I'm doing God's work over there, yeah.
All right. Well, Star Wars Theory.
He's not wrong for what he's doing.
Right.
He's creating content because this company continues to pump out movies and pump out other toys and books and comic books and television shows and comic books and movies.
Right, go right ahead.
Everything.
And so, they even said go right ahead.
So talk about it. But what we're going to do...
We're
going to
take the money.
We're going to take the money.
We spent $4 billion on this.
We're going to take the... And they made it all back. But we're going to take the money because now you can't profit off a movie. You monetize off of us all the other times. We don't take a piece. And I want to know how many followers he has, how many subscribers he has on YouTube.
That's a great question.
Because if he has a lot of subscribers, then there's probably a Patreon account. So he's probably crowdsourcing. So he's making money.
Right. I just feel like...
I just don't think... He probably thought, well, I'm going to make a big chunk of money.
But he must be... But this. He had to have been a moron to think that. Because how can you think... Like, yes, if you're a YouTuber and that's how you make your living, you know how that all works, but...
Yeah, but you also have to... Like, WrestleRap has an entertainment lawyer. Mm-hmm. So if I want to do something...
That's Vinny Boombatz, right?
It's Vinny Boombatz. I'm calling Vinny Boombatz Esquire, and I'm like, bing, bang, boom, bada, bing, how do I do this? And then he comes back with kaplow, or no, I would advise you not to.
He has 1.4 million subscribers.
He's eaten quite nicely.
Right. I can't look at it now, but an hour ago, he just put up another video.
Yeah.
So he's turning this into a whole fucking content.
Of course he is, and that's making him money.
But that's stupid, because I think like making... Now, look, I'm not saying now, that
what
I
would like to know is how much do the streams... How much do you get per stream, and how much of that do you get? Is it after 1,000 streams you get paid?
I have no idea how the YouTube thing
works. See, I've never really monetized from YouTube. I've had offers to do it when I was doing regular interviews.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because they started to collect thousands and hundreds of thousands.
Yeah, yeah.
But I never did that because it was wacky territory that I felt, wait a minute, maybe I have to break off record labels and artists. Once the
way I would see it is, if I were Star Wars Theory, if I was so inclined to make a fan film, I would see that as an investment in the rest of the brand. I'd say I'm not going to make anything on this because it's a giant brand. You know, I think it would be more heartbreaking if they said you have to take it down.
We're shutting you down. C&D. Period. Though,
right?
They could shut
Which
him down.
They didn't.
No, because he's still profiting from other Star Wars-esque properties. So, which is fine. You can talk about all the shit you want.
Right.
You could talk about Emperor Snoke. You could talk about Ahsoka. You could talk about
Supreme
whoever.
Leader Snoke. God damn it, Amelia.
I'm sorry. Don't you fucking judge me. You know, you could talk about The Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi. Whatever, man. Like, do you. But the thing is this.
So the people listening at home, Emilio had to look at my Empire Strikes Back and Return of the Jedi posters on the wall. He's just looking around like Kaiser Sose in Usual Suspects.
It's
just
easy.
Picking things off the wall.
Get creative. Do Star Wars Muppets.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Again, he's looking at the wall. All right. So moving on in neckbeard news, Gillette.
Oh, yeah.
Razor company.
Oh, yeah.
So Gillette, if you don't know, they're a company that makes razors.
A Boston-based company.
Yes. And for many years, their slogan has been the best a man
men can
get. So they made a...
They gave us the science behind not one, not two, but three blades.
I know. No one thought it could be done, but Gillette they did it. So they made a commercial, which is, I think it's a minute and 30 seconds, and it's interesting because it begins with
trending number 10.
Yeah.
Worldwide.
It begins with, you know, you hear the old Gillette, the best a man can get, and then it's like, but is that the best? And then you see clips of men catcalling women. And you see two little boys fighting, and then their dads are like, oh, boys will be boys. And you see someone mansplaining a woman in a board meeting. And then you see a real clip of Terry Crews speaking before Congress saying that men have to call out other men. And it's basically this razor company trying to make a message in the Me Too movement. Now, look, we can get into, you know, a plastic razor company. Why are they doing this? Or, as many people have pointed out, you're the company that makes pink razors for women and blue razors for men and somehow markets them as different. But whatever. Whatever their
motives... And they make money off
right,
that.
Whatever their motives are, whatever. I thought it was a cool video.
So did I.
It was...
All the comments are ridiculous.
I haven't checked it since this afternoon, but when I checked it this afternoon, the video had 88,000 likes... And 353,000 dislikes. And the comment section. Oh, the comment section. is full of... Here's one. I've been shaving since I was 12. Weird flex, but okay. Since the beginning, I used Gillette because that's what my father used. Now I will never use it again, and never will my father. Collectively, been your customers for 50-plus years, never again. Hashtag boycott Gillette.
This is a good one. This was just posted 32 minutes ago. Who else came just to dislike this indoctrination?
Gillette has made it clear they do not want the business of masculine men. I will grant their wish. I'm sorry. I think I'm a masculine man. I try to not mansplain. I just hate when people are like, oh, well, this is anti-man. And it's like, well, I'm a man, and I don't do these things.
I don't get this comment. I'm sure this was the future the men who stormed the beaches of Normandy envisioned.
Because
what?
Well, Gillette are Nazis. I guess it's this idea of, like, you're fighting against men. Meanwhile, the video is not about just being a man. It's about verbally abusing women, talking down to women, and promoting violence in children. That's all it is. In the video, they show, you know, at the end of the video, when there's a turn, the dad goes up to the little kids and goes, hey, stop fighting. This isn't how we treat one another. But that is radical enough that the people who are like, ah, well, this is anti-man. Because I guess you're supposed to fucking slap boxing gloves on your kids and fucking throw them in the backyard, and you and crazy Uncle Sal will fucking bet on which kid lives and dies.
Mike, my dad's a brown belt in jiu-jitsu.
Is he?
Yeah. And never once did he ever say, you gotta do this, you gotta do that. If we ever did scrap,
yeah,
what are you doing?
Right.
This is not how you're supposed to do it.
Right. It's just,
if it leads to that, fine. My father was always, and my father's the epitome of that silent chain smoke Marlboro construction worker type masculine dad that would silently just let the mother raise the kids, and he would throw down the paycheck, utter four words, go to sleep, and then get up again.
I'm going to the basement.
We didn't have a basement growing up. We had a one floor apartment.
Yeah,
you know, the whole idea of masculinity to me was never one where, well, you know, oh, we gotta fight to, you know, my dad never said that. My father was like, this is, and we did martial arts on and off for years.
Yeah.
And, you know, the whole mantra of martial arts to my father, my grandfather, who is a 10th degree black belt in jiu-jitsu, was like, well, this is what we teach, and we teach if something does pop off and shit does go down, you will know how to defend yourself.
Right.
But you do not in any way post up or flex, is how the kids like to say it nowadays, and abuse the practitioner in which we've taught you. Ever.
Yeah.
You know?
The people who are complaining about this commercial seem to be saying that catcalling women and promoting violence in children is what defines men. And if you don't want us to do that, you just don't like men.
And that's stupid. I don't understand how we know, because we're logical men within our fields, and we understand a level of masculinity that's not this, oh, well, you got to spit and scratch your balls and walk around, right, you know, and think a woman should be pregnant and barefoot, you know, making you a chicken fried steak in the kitchen. You know, yeah. I don't understand, like, a lot of people, I hear arguments all the time in my gym about the pussification of America. And my thing is,
say that to Terry Crews's face.
Exactly.
Why don't you go walk up to Terry Crews and call him a pussy?
Yeah.
See what happens then.
Yeah, exactly. I don't understand the whole reasoning behind, well, if they're just trying to do a PSA, right? And this commercial's not being aired on television. It's just a PSA.
Right. And they are a big company. They're not trying to, you know.
They know who their target audience is.
I'm not defending Gillette as a fucking plastic maker.
Let's be honest, though. They also know who their target audience is.
Yeah.
So they know what they're doing. One of the most touching scenes that I saw was the mother holding the child who was visibly upset. And it gave no rhyme or reason as to why. And then you see the kids chasing the other kid.
Yeah.
In like, as it's like, as like he's like busting through the room. And I thought that was rather telling as well. So what? Now we're gonna have to tell our wives, no, you cannot mother our little boys. No, you can't hold them if they skin their knee. Or no, you can't give them any type of affection because that will make them soft.
Apparently. Apparently, this commercial will make them soft.
Yeah, that's it.
Listen to this comment because it really brings everything together. And this is posted by somebody called Jar Jar Binks. That's really the name. Was this commercial directed by Rian Johnson? It certainly subverted my expectations. See,
That's clever.
Bring that up because it's a Star Wars reference. I bring it up because somehow all these things are connected. I think what the internet has showed us is that everything can be radicalized. Even angry dudes and neckbeards. Somehow the hate for this commercial and the love for Star Wars Theory and the hate for Rian Johnson and the blah blah, somehow all of this works together in this sort of
weird incel synergy.
The world is against me. I would be out having sex every day if it wasn't for feminism. Bullshit. That being said, I don't really shave. I use a buzzer.
I don't look at my face.
Now you look like you haven't shaved in a fortnight. Fortnite, by the way, kids, is not just a game. All right, let's go to the trailer corner. Velvet Buzzsaw.
That was fucking strange, man.
Little and Hellboy. All right,
love Little, and I'm kind of geeked for Hellboy.
All right, let's talk about Velvet Buzzsaw. Okay.
It's John Malkovich being John Malkovich.
I love John Malkovich. It's a YouTube.
I should have never quit drinking.
Yeah, yeah, I love him. It's a horror movie set in the world of fine art, I guess, modern art.
Both.
And an art critic played by Jake Gyllenhaal, who I think, just from the trailer, is doing a terrible job.
I don't like him. I've never enjoyed anything he was in.
I've enjoyed things he's in, but he's never been the reason I enjoyed them.
You look at him and think he's a fantastic thespian.
No, I don't. I think he's been in good things, though. This is, by the way, the same writer-director. This is Dan Gilroy, who did Nightcrawlers, which is a good movie he happens to be in.
Yeah.
And Rene Russo is also in that and in whatever the fuck this is, Velvet Buzzsaw. So this art critic finds, I guess he finds this art that no one knows who the artist is, and he starts selling it.
Because he died.
Yes. And
well, the person that found it,
Vigo style,
yeah.
People come out of the paintings.
Yeah.
Like, there's a really funny scene where someone's looking at a painting of monkeys, and then like you see the monkey paws come out and start grabbing at the guy's face.
I was hoping he would throw shit.
It'd be nice if just a clump of shit hit him in the cheek.
Because at first I thought it was going to be a satire on the art world.
Yeah, I thought so too.
Because of how odd Gyllenhaal was playing this character.
Yeah, he's wearing it looks like he went to Spirit Halloween and he was like, I would like the art critic costume. And they're like, oh, here's your thin framed glasses and here's your tight suit.
Can I just wear the same exact outfit Bronson Pinchot wore in Beverly Hills Cop 1?
Yes.
Because I thought at first from the trailer it was going to be, well, John Malkovich cannot create anymore. He doesn't like his work. People don't like the work.
Right.
So they found a shit ton of paintings that are amazing from this person that committed suicide, so we thought in the beginning.
Yeah.
And now he sets the art world ablaze with this newfound style that he's doing.
Right.
And then all of a sudden, well, what's the, all the zaniness before the truth gets uncovered? Right.
But there's a robot in it.
Yeah.
What's the fucking robot doing?
I guess we have to watch Netflix to see.
Fuck. Let's talk about Little. Little, I guess the one-line pitch is it's a sequel or remake of Big.
Yeah.
It's called Little.
Yeah.
It is about...
It's just reverse now.
Exactly. It's about a woman who is a... How do you describe her? She's a businesswoman and she's really shitty to her assistant and she's like crushing it and she's mean to people. And some little kid is like, I wish you were little like me, and puts a movie spell on her. And she wakes up and she's one of the twins from Black-ish. And now her and her assistant are, the assistant is like taking care of her.
Yeah.
And she's little. And it's the opposite of Big.
It's the coming of age story. Where, oh shit, okay, no, I can't treat people this way.
Right.
I can't be mean. So now let me change my ways, and then I become an adult again.
Right.
Yeah.
I don't like You know, in the original Big, and by the way, I like Big, but Big has some weird shit
in
it.
Oh my God, it lags.
And it's got weird shit in it.
Yeah. It's not as great as people make it out to be.
Right, right. But I want a Tom Hanks cameo in this. I want one. I want Tom Hanks to just be there at some point.
You think they shoehorned it in somehow?
I bet a call went to his office. I don't know if he answered. By the way, this movie is directed by Tina Gordon Chisholm, who also just wrote the new remake of What Men Want, What Women Want. So this is...
I saw the trailer to that. And
yeah.
I love me some Taraji P. Henson, so I'm very, very excited to see that movie. Because I want to get in. I would love to see, because we heard the male gaze version of that.
Yeah.
Where Mel Gibson manipulated women's thoughts to advance his career.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So now I want to see the same thing.
So this is the second, this is two movies that she's made that are taking a premise,
yep,
switching the gender, yep, and also making it predominantly African-American cast.
Yeah.
And also in the case of Big, switching from Big to Little. It looks cute. I've always liked this little girl on Blackish. I think she's funny. I think there could be funny stuff in it. I like Issa Rae.
Oh, Issa Rae is fantastic.
Issa Rae is great in everything.
She was good in that when she started spanking her.
And then she's like, spanky kids. So, Hellboy.
Let's take Deadpool and make a prequel to an already failed franchise.
But it didn't fail.
You don't think so? Those movies are not great.
I think they're good, and they made a lot of money.
I don't think they were fantastic.
There would have been a third one if Guillermo were interested in doing that.
Yeah.
I don't understand why we did this. Because to me, it feels like one of these reboots. It's like it doesn't feel enough like a reboot. David Harbour from Stranger Things is Hellboy now. And I was excited when I heard this because I like him. And I was like, okay, let's see what the new Hellboy looks like.
Bring a different dimension. It's the same look.
It looks exactly the same. He looks no different.
Well, you really can't change up the character. The only thing that...
But you could do the makeup differently. There's a lot of... You could take it differently.
He looks like Ron Perlman.
Yeah, it looks exactly the same. It doesn't seem
different. He has more hair on his head, though.
It doesn't seem different enough to justify its rebootness. To me.
See, I thought it was
a
prequel.
It looks like
fun. See, I thought it was a prequel.
I don't think so. Because that movie begins with the beginning.
But he looks younger.
Oh, maybe.
That's why. And
the original Hellboy shows him as a kid, though.
But he's more thin.
I guess. I don't think it's a prequel. I think it's meant to be... I don't think it's part of the canon of those movies. I think it's like, here, we're doing it again.
Oh.
It looks fun enough. I'm not saying it looks
bad. And the arm works better, too.
Well, I'm sure in whatever the 10, 15 years since they made the last ones, it'll be better looking. It just, to me, the little bit that I've seen David Harbour, he's not hitting it out of the park the way I think Ron Perlman did.
Yeah.
I think he's getting lost a little bit in the makeup, which is something Ron Perlman doesn't do because he was fucking Beast from Beauty and the Beast and he knows what he's doing. It's going to be okay. It's just, to me, when I first heard about it, I was excited.
You don't notice the Deadpool vibes? The way the dialogue sometimes flows,
way
the jokes.
Yeah, but I think that's always kind of been Hellboy. Hellboy's always been, you know, one of these, like, what are they, Image? I think they're Image. Hellboy's always been, like, different. You know, he was a creation of the 90s, and he's not Marvel or DC. I think my disappointment was that when I first heard about it, I thought that it was going to be wildly different. It was going to be really distinct from the Guillermo del Toro movies, and it looks just like them.
Well, I mean, if you're going to stick with the tone.
But you can change the way...
Star Wars has been the same.
Yeah, but you can change...
They don't shoot space pretty. Guardians of the Galaxy, two movies in a row, shot space
pretty. But it's more nuanced than that. You can, you know, you can use more handheld. You can use different colors. You could have different tone. You know, everything was very big in the Guillermo del Toro movies. And I thought maybe it would be slightly
different. So
this
feels forced, is what you're telling me.
It just feels the same. It just feels like, well, why didn't we just make a third one of the originals then? What's the point?
I don't know, man. It's just looking. I had to post up an image because I wanted to see the picture.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And yeah, it looks like Ron Perlman got Botox. Like,
yeah,
it just
yeah,
looks
yeah,
very, very stiff and...
Yeah.
Like, the face doesn't move. There's no... Like, you could tell when it was mm-hmm. Perlman. Mm-hmm. There was distinction in the expression. Now, again, it's a trailer. So...
Right.
We're probably not even seeing everything, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But what I want to know is, you don't feel that these darker films now, even though they're supposed to be quote-unquote edgy, they're not really copying what Deadpool does and probably makes more humor-based within the darkness?
I think... Have you seen Venom?
No, I will not.
I think Venom, which I liked, yeah. You can feel a real... you can feel a Deadpool-ness to it. I think it's... I don't know. It's more like having the balls to be R-rated.
But does that give you balls, though? Do you need to be R-rated?
I think certain characters really work that way.
You can't be a hard PG-13.
I think a hard PG-13 Venom, you get that with fucking Topher Grace in Spider-Man 3.
Ugh.
You need Venom fucking eating people's heads.
All right, true. All
right, let's take a break. We'll be right back.
For Josh Baskin, life was a little unfair. Until he made a little wish.
I wish I were big.
Sweetheart, it's 7:30. Are you up? Josh!
20th Century Fox presents... My heart's getting bigger. Tom Hanks. Big.
I turned into a grown-up, Mom. I made this wish on a machine, and it turned me into a grown-up.
So now what?
You get a job.
Cannot get a job.
I play with all of this stuff, and then I tell them what I think.
Did they pay you for that?
Suckers!
Vice President, he's only been here a week.
See that girl over there in the red? Short upper legs around you so tight, you'll be begging for mercy.
Well, I'll stay away from her then.
I loved your ideas on the squeezy doll line.
Thanks.
What were you like when you were younger?
Ah! Oh, well, that wasn't much different.
Eject your seat!
Who are you?
I'm his girlfriend.
I want to spend the night with you.
Do you mean sleep over?
Yeah.
Okay. But I get to be on top.
What is so special about Baskin?
He's a grown-up.
How do I feel about what?
How do you feel about me?
You're only young once.
This is important!
I'm your best friend. What's more important than that, huh?
But for Josh...
I miss my family, Susan, and I want to go home.
Oh my God, you're married!
It just might last a lifetime.
Welcome to the Chill Sesh. You've never looked more chill in the Chill Sesh.
Let me tell you something, Michael. This is the most relaxed I've been in a long time.
Because this is post-yoga.
It's the restorative part of the yoga, which I think helps.
Yeah. So, what have you been chilling with?
King of the Hill.
That's a show that I avoided like the plague. And I don't know why.
Same.
I don't know why. It just, I thought it was going to be boring.
It's not.
It isn't?
No. It's not. I thought, first off, I also assumed... that it would be ridiculously conservative.
Right.
It's the complete opposite.
Really?
Yeah.
So, it's not about an old Southern man hating on people.
No. It's more about, like, you could tell he's real, like, stuck in his ways to a certain point.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has that old mentality where men are men and the women are this, that. But then... I don't know. It's odd because there's a softness in the way he thinks in terms of his family.
Okay.
And how Peggy is legitimately the one who controls the ebb and flow of the household.
Who's your favorite character?
I like Hank a lot.
You like Hank?
Yeah.
He's a propane man.
He's propane accessories.
Okay.
The whole thing. I like the next door neighbor Con. Like, the whole thing is just well written.
Now, there are Native American characters in there, right?
Yes, John Redcorn.
And
Joseph Gribble.
And how are they depicted?
Well, Joseph Gribble is supposed to be the biological son of Dale and Nancy Gribble.
Okay.
Nancy has been having an affair with her massage healer for her right. migraine headaches, John Redcorn. And they, John Redcorn fathered a illegitimate child with Nancy Hicks Gribble.
Wow.
Yeah.
Where are you watching this? You seem deep into it.
My house.
Let me reiterate what I mean. What channel or what service in which are you getting this content?
Cat from Comic Trips is Hulu.
Oh, okay. Shout out to her Hulu. You know what? Why not give the audience her login information?
So it's been a sea of just Vanderpump Rules and King of the Hill.
I've been watching Sloppy's World. Did you check out Sloppy's World yet?
No. I want to. It's on the list.
God, you... This show was made for you.
Is it?
Oh my God, it was made for you.
I like how you assume this.
It's not an insult. Nothing to... Don't take any insult from it. I love it too.
As I spring up on the recliner a little bit.
Bro, Sloppy's World is... It's a lot like the Porn Star Show. Because a lot of the... It's a reality show.
Yeah.
So a lot of the quote-unquote reality drama is haggling over a price.
I love that.
So, but Sloppy... is this big fat dude who wears fucking Gucci overalls and has big beard like you and fucking crazy hair and crazy rings. And he is an 80s and 90s...
connoisseur.
Connoisseur. And that's everything from like toys like I'm into to like he knows everything about actual fashion from that time. And he sells bootlegs in his store, but he's but he explains...
Bootleg what?
Gucci and other things.
Well, that's
things.
Become a thing.
Right. He explains that bootlegs are not the same thing as fakes.
Did they talk about Dapper Dan?
I don't remember.
Okay, because Dapper Dan was bootlegging or customizing Gucci pieces.
Okay, for maybe years they might have.
In Harlem. Because
he says fake is trying to be real.
Yeah.
Bootleg is like they did their own thing.
They did their own
thing.
And he
sells real things too.
Yeah.
There's an episode where a guy comes in with Jordans that are like all white, like perfect, like crisp white.
Mm hmm.
And they also do customs there. And they're sitting around, you know, it's a fake reality show. I mean, it's real, but like everything's staged.
Yeah, of course.
So they're sitting around playing Mario 3 because somebody brought in Mario 3. And they're telling him how much they love it. And then he goes, we can make those Nikes into Mario 3 customs.
Yeah.
And then he takes out a pen and paper. He starts doing it. And then his, like, right-hand man, he's the one who actually, you see him with the fucking airbrush. And then the guy comes in. He charges him $500 for the thing. And he takes these Jordans, and he makes them the yellow of the Mario 3 cover. The check, the Nike check, is the green hills with the like yeah. diamonds on it.
So there's a lot of detail.
And in the back, he puts the fucking Sanuki raccoon tail.
No shit.
And he makes them beautiful. It's
my buddy
it's crazy.
Mosh is a sneaker customizer. He does a lot of work for the WWE and the NFL.
Really?
Yeah, man. His work is gnarly. It's great.
You would absolutely love this show. And there's a lot, but, you know...
See, you would think it would be the other way around. You'd be watching King of the Hill, and I'd be watching Sloppy's World.
Right. Well, I first started watching Sloppy's because I read the synopsis, and I was like, oh, I bet there's going to be a lot of toys and shit. And there really isn't. He's more in... Like, there's toys and shit, like... But he's more into the fashion. Like, all right, he goes to a swap meet, and he finds... From a store, something that wasn't for sale, the polo horse, but like a big red polo horse, like sign that somebody must have just swiped at one point. He buys it for $40 because the woman doesn't know what she has. Then he goes to this collector's house who like this guy, like he says, spends tons and tons of money on polo shit. He's a polo collector and he sells it to that guy for like $500.
That's that American picker shit.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because Frank and Mike... go buy all these signs from across the country.
Right.
They probably get them for like $100 and then they're charging like
right.
thousands.
He sees that people don't know what they have.
Yep. There's a value in that. I like Sloppy. I gotta watch this now.
You'd love it.
Where is this on?
Netflix.
Really?
Yeah.
How many episodes?
I think eight or ten. One thing that really struck me as like just tickled my fancy is they find at the swap meet a bootleg Italian Skeletor costume. That it looks like Masters Universe, but it's like it's off brand and it's got Italian writing on it. And they buy it for like $3. And then he's like, I'm going to sell this for $1,000.
Smart.
To some idiot like me.
Smart. And you'd buy it.
I mean, Probably, yeah.
I would too.
If I were a wealthy man, I'd have so much more bullshit. I would really go crazy with the absolute nonsense.
I don't think I would. I think I would be the exact opposite. I'd probably have, you know, a lot of clothes and shoes, obviously, but like trinkets, like around the house, I'd probably be really, really minimal.
Okay.
Like, I want a YSL Teddy jacket. It's about $2,800.
What the fuck is that?
It's just a pretty fucking varsity jacket that YSL makes, Yves Saint Laurent.
You know what I want?
What do you want?
Okay. When they made the film, The Empire Strikes Back.
That thing that's on your wall.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
They filmed the planet Hoth. They filmed that. I forget where they really filmed
it. This tea's delicious, by the way.
You're welcome. We truck in the water from Flint, Michigan. So they filmed it, like, I forget where, but someplace where it's really unbearably cold. So they had these crew jackets that are like...
I know what you're talking about. I know what you want.
Yeah, yeah. They're blue. They say crew. Mm-hmm. Empire Strikes Back. They've got the furry thing. And they just made replicas of them. And they're like $500.
Yeah.
But they're like wearable and they look exactly like the original.
I think Columbia makes them.
I would love it. I would love it.
So why don't you buck up and get yourself a good winter coat? I've seen your winter coat.
But for $500, I feel like it's not versatile enough. I mean, I'm sure it's very warm, but it's like, and I know this is me saying this because I only wear stupid t-shirts, but do I want just my main winter coat to be something that says Empire Strikes Back crew?
Yes. Because it's a crew jacket.
It's a replica crew jacket.
Yeah. So you should get that. And then you would walk in and your students would be like, this guy is big time because he's got an actual crew jacket from the movie that he obsesses over.
Yeah, that's what they'll do.
Yeah. They'd be like, damn. Mikey B is amazing.
I knew he was G'd up from the feet up, but I had no idea he had the kind of money to be, yeah, okay.
Sleeved up from the wrist.
Yeah. Is that a thing?
I don't know. I'm just making it up right now.
Okay. Okay.
Listen, you would have an amazing drip. You would have the sauce. Like, your fit would
stop
always be.
Stop saying words
important.
I don't understand, Amelia.
Oh, Michael. Don't you watch Made in Staten Island to hear all this nomenclature?
No. I don't watch Made in Staten Island. I don't even know what the fuck that is.
You're not losing any sleep. Back to the mundane humor that is King of the Hill.
Yeah, please.
I like it, man. I don't know why, but it's just, it's simple. In like, also, I want to know what Mike Judd's obsession is with fictional towns in Texas.
Like, it's probably where he came from.
Is it? I say, I don't know nothing about Mike Judd. And I was into Beavis and Butthead, but I was too young to understand Beavis and Butthead.
Yeah.
So I like Beavis and Butthead for the dick and fart jokes because
the nonsense of
I was a child.
Cornholio.
Yeah, Cornholio and Teepee for my bunghole.
Yeah,
and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, because I had a bunghole.
Yeah, yeah,
you
yeah.
You know, and I was like, oh, wow, wait a minute. Okay, I get it. Wow, all right, this is awesome. But
yeah.
Did it really stand the test of time? I don't think I can go back, or maybe I should watch Beavis and Butthead and see whether or not this hits. King of the Hill was on for like fucking, I don't
a
even
long
know
time.
How many seasons. I want to say 13?
But it existed in that 7 to 8 sort of nebulous
97 to 2010. That is a long time. And there.
Wow.
And if you think about it, the way media changed, the way cartoons changed, the way writing changed, like the show stayed the course and stayed the same. If anything, the topics just got.
But it's funny, you don't hear tough. King of the Hill brought up in conversations where people talk about Family Guy and South Park.
In
and
what
Simpsons.
Way, though? In more of a
I feel like it's
risque
like,
factor?
No. I just feel like when people talk about, like, what are the great primetime animated shows, it gets
it was
forgotten.
On Fox for a lot of years,
it gets
dude.
Forgotten. But it was in that weird 7 to 8 hour, which is, like, technically primetime, but everything before 8 doesn't feel important.
You think that?
Yeah. I think the difference between 7:30 and 8 is like, you know, junior varsity and varsity.
But okay, so you don't think that even though, I don't know. Wait a minute, I'm trying to remember when they aired. I don't think it was on at 7.
I mean, over the 12 years that it was on, it changed. At some point, it was on during the 7 hour. Maybe it didn't start that way.
Let's see the history. I'm going to look it up real quick because I want to know now. Now you got me interested. I want to know when this actually aired.
I like Mike Judd's movies. Extract. Office Space, I feel, is a little too... It's a little overrated. It's somehow an overrated cult classic. Idiocracy, of course, gets brought up every day now because it's like the world we actually live in.
Why do you think he doesn't get the credit that he deserves as a director? Because he's had not one, but two shows that were monumental successes.
Long series. Made truckloads
of money.
Yeah.
One spawned a movie that was a huge success.
Yeah.
Beavis and Butthead, there was a...
There was an album.
There was this weird documentary on Netflix that I was watching during the Christmas break that if I find it again, I'm going to send it to you.
Yeah.
Where they talk about as soon as Frog Baseball aired on television, they were getting options to make it a movie.
Wow.
Yeah.
They were on...
And MTV was smart enough and had the wherewithal to go, no, we're not doing that right now.
They went on David Letterman, though. Do you remember when Beavis and Butthead were guests on the...
That was when the show was at its initial success. This is early when they were like, okay, we're going to do 86 episodes in one season. It's a lot.
I think they did that all in-house, too.
Well, Mike Judd, everything was in-house, yeah.
I don't know. I think he's a guy.
That was the first MTV movie, too. MTV's first, like,
Was pre-Joe's Apartment?
Mm-hmm. That was the first movie that MTV took a gamble with to make MTV films.
I remember not liking the movie that much.
Beavis and Butthead Do America? Yeah. No, that was... And I'll tell you why it's great. They're supposed to be traveling the country, seeing all this cool shit, and they only like the stuff that they're into. Do you remember the scene when they're going to look at the Grand Canyon, right?
Uh-huh.
And everybody's marveling at how pretty the Grand Canyon is and how deep it is. They're looking at a donkey's balls.
I actually don't remember much about it. I remember they meet their parents, and their parents are voiced by... One is David Letterman, and the other one's fucking... Who's the other person? It's another celebrity voices one of their dads.
Was it Spade? Was it David Spade?
No, I'm thinking maybe it was Bruce Willis.
Bruce Willis, no. Bruce Willis was the other guy in the film. And then Demi Moore was Beavis's love interest, who was married to the character that Bruce Willis voiced.
Can we take a sidetrack here?
Mm-hmm.
Have you seen this video going around of Demi Moore making out with like a 12-year-old kid?
No.
Okay.
Is this a real thing?
Or
was
I watched it. A movie? It. No. I watched it.
How'd that make you feel?
Creepy. Somebody found this video from the 80s. And
so how old was she?
She was like at the height of her stardom.
I feel like she's been an adult for a long time.
This was like, you know,
St. Elmo's fire.
Exactly. And what it seems like in the video is you see it's like a birthday party and there's like a 12-year-old kid with like glasses.
Was it
like
Ashton Kutcher?
No.
Frankie Muniz.
No.
Okay.
And, you know, the kid blows out his candles and then Demi Moore comes out. And I guess it's like maybe the kid's parents knew someone who knew her. And it's like, hey, Billy, it's your 12th birthday. Here's your favorite model. Here's your favorite movie star. And he's so excited to see her. And then she gives him a little peck on the lips, which is like creepy, but I guess it's cute. Like the boy probably has a crush on her. She's this big sex symbol. But then she like... kisses him again.
I want to see this. You have this?
Can makes
you
out with him.
I gotta see this.
And by the way, the person who posted it on Twitter was like, everyone's talking about R. Kelly. Can we talk about when Demi Moore made out with a child?
That's crazy.
Yo, it is.
Happy birthday, Billy. Here's your present, Demi Moore.
I put Demi Moore. It puts Demi Moore kisses kid. God, this is so weird.
Let me see this.
Does it have sound?
Entertainment Tonight. Okay, she's super young here, too. Wow. All right. Mother, I'm your friend. Oh, I like that Doris t-shirt. Okay, wait, this kid, wow, he looks like he's 10, but he talks like an adult.
Yeah. So it's like home video footage.
This looks like a swinging party for a 12-year-old.
He's probably like the nephew of a studio executive.
Or the son of a studio executive.
Now there's a woman singing. I don't know what the fuck this is.
I thought that was Jessica Lange. Oh, she's drunk.
Yeah, she is. Yeah, Demi Moore looks young. But this she's in Elmo's Fire. This is even pre-Ghost.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, so now she's stroking the kid on the head. The kid's looking at her lovingly.
And she's laughing.
One more time.
And now she's kissing. So first it starts as a peck, but then it goes too
okay,
long.
Okay, wait a minute. All right.
Wait.
Oh, they kiss again?
It gets worse.
Wait, they keep on making out?
Yeah. And this is a child
who grew up to be Ashton Kutcher. What does he love?
I don't know.
But who?
Why is this?
But see, now even he's making moves now.
Yeah.
Oh my God! They kissed over a child. Did you see that?
Yeah.
He kissed her.
And everybody's like kind of treating it like, this is cute, but it's also weird.
I'm Philip Tanzini, and I play Jeremy. You're stealing my card.
Oh, maybe he's a kid actor.
Who is this kid?
I have no idea.
Oh, she's hammered.
Yeah.
Is that Elliot from E.T. right over there?
No.
But he's like a little adult.
Yeah.
Tony Leary.
Is that how they do it in Hollywood?
I don't know. Everything about this is weird.
Oh, she's so drunk. She has that glassy eye look.
Yeah, she don't know where she is. She don't know what the fuck's going on.
How do you end up at a child's birthday party at an Italian restaurant?
I feel that I'm gonna wipe that person right off the screen because I'm.
What are they talking about?
I don't know. I think they're talking about a movie.
I think she's great.
Are we being worked right now?
But this isn't CGI. That kid's not a puppet. That's really an adult woman kissing a little boy.
I'm so lost. Like,
yeah.
They were supposed to be an exclusive at us. I wanted. That has to be Elliot from E.T., right? That
no, I, that's not Elliot from E.T.
No?
No.
Oh.
It looks like that we will, but I don't know, honestly. I'm 19.
She's 19. I just turned 19, she said.
She looks like she's 25 here.
It's so new and so different.
Does she get a pass because she's 19? And he's 12?
I don't know.
12?
I think she's getting a pass here in the room at this point.
Because it's the 80s?
No, like, because she's a girl. Because it's not a grown-up man kissing a little girl. It's a grown-up, beautiful woman kissing a little boy and, like, giving this little boy a thrill.
But how is that not wrong, though?
Oh, it's wrong. Oh, here we go. More kissing.
Who is this kid? Is his real name Philip Tanzini? Like, if we can we Google this right now? And who is David? I want to know who David is too, because David looks eerily familiar.
All right, we're gonna look up the context to this insanity.
You blew my mind with this.
It's insane.
This is not part of the chill sesh.
It this feels unchill, doesn't
this
it?
This is unchill. Like, I feel creepy watching that. And the singing of Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
It's all very weird. Okay.
What type of 12-year-old's party is that? What type of 12-year-old talks like that?
Okay, so this is from The Independent, so it's a UK rag. But let's see here. Oh, the boy's 15. But still she's 19. And he looks 10 and she looks...
It's only 4 years.
Yeah, but he looks like a little baby and she looks like a grown-ass woman.
Yeah, she does. Is his name Philip Tanzini? Because he said Philip Tanzini.
Reportedly shot, according to the Mail Online, in 1982, when Moore was 19, it was aired by Entertainment Tonight and centers on the 15th birthday of her General Hospital co-star, Philip Tanzini. So they were both on General Hospital together. Posted on YouTube in 2012 and racking up over 6.5 million views, the five-minute montage sees Moore initiate a kiss with Tanzini on three separate occasions. Moore professes her love for Tanzini, though, throughout the video, saying, "I love Philip. He's the only one I love. I love him dearly. He's one of my most favorite people. He's truly terrific, and I really love him." She also says, perhaps jokingly, that she intends to marry Tanzini, despite being married herself at the time, having wed her first husband, Freddie Moore, when she was 17.
Yeah.
Following the success of General Hospital, which still runs
today...
Which
is creepy in itself.
Right.
Being married at 17.
Following the success of General Hospital, which still runs today with new cast members, Moore went on to enjoy a long and high-profile career, while Tanzini never found fame, today providing voiceover work for TV shows and commercials. So, that's a little bit of the context. This is fucking weird.
Right? That is insane, man. Hollywood, back in the 80s.
She's very drunk in this.
Oh, she's insanely sloshed.
The footage dates back to 1982 when Demi Moore was 19. The footage itself was shot by E.T. It's currently on YouTube where it has 6.5 million views.
Has more than that.
Tanzini does not appear under the influence and frankly looks like he's clearly enjoying the multiple advances.
Do you blame him?
Moore was married at the time to Freddie Moore. But in the video, Moore joked that she loved Tanzini. He's the only one that I love. So I guess the idea here is that she's drunk and she's like, I love this little kid, he's the best.
And then he's just going in for more pecks on the lips.
But if Philip Tanzini, wherever he may be, says, I don't care, I didn't feel abused, and in fact it was one of the greatest moments of my life, does she still get in trouble?
I don't know, man. That...
It's weird. It's definitely wrong behavior.
Now let me ask you
it's
this.
It's definitely wrong behavior.
Now let me ask you this. Was it creepy that I took a 25-year-old to my prom when I was 18?
No.
And we hooked up for an entire summer?
No, because you were an adult. 15, the difference between 15 and 18 isn't just a couple of years.
It's a mentality.
It's a huge mental and biological change.
But now also, there has to be something maybe wrong with Demi's thinking because she was married at 17.
Well, maybe in 1982 that wasn't so crazy.
You think?
I mean,
my grandmother, God rest her soul, was married at 16. But that's right. Going back to like 1950 something.
My parents were married when they were like 18, and that was like the 70s.
Yeah, but your mom was 18, your dad was 18, your mom wasn't 15, and your dad wasn't 19.
Right. This is definitely wrong behavior. But yeah. I'm wondering about...
But this is where it comes to... Well, it's an attractive woman kissing a young boy who's having the time of his life on his birthday.
Right.
So how does that get a pass?
And does the boy... Can the boy really consent to something at his age?
Oh, he's all full of hormones.
It's weird.
The kid got a Doris t-shirt and a kiss from Demi Moore and he's eating... Baked ziti. He's having... That's, to me...
That's the greatest
day of
your life.
That's a great birthday ever.
Yeah, that's bizarre. That's bizarre behavior.
But see, although why does it get reversed like that, though? That's what I want to know.
What do you mean?
Like, why is it... It's okay because... Why? Because he's a little boy and she's like...
I don't know if it's
she's
okay.
She's pretty.
I don't know if it's okay.
I mean, what are the comments saying?
People seem really upset by it.
I hope they would be.
But is it the same exact thing as what R. Kelly...
Well, no. I don't think Philip Tanzini and Demi Moore were having sexual relations. And I don't think she was forcing herself onto him. And I don't think he was forcing himself onto her. So I think there's a big difference in that way.
This is weird ground because she's wrong and it's definitely wrong behavior. But I wonder what the political...
I wonder
what's behind this video resurfacing now.
Because I think...
And who's like... Who's trying to make some weird argument?
I think it's because, oh, well, all this stuff is happening now.
I think it's a lot of that, well, men, oh, look, women do it and they get away with it.
I also think it's a lot of clickbait, too.
Oh, of course. I had a crush on her when I was a little kid.
She's beautiful.
And I used to watch The Ghost on VHS all the time.
Bro, she's elegant.
And I would, if I had gotten a kiss from her, it would have been the thrill of my life.
Exactly. Even if it was just a little peck on the lip. Now, granted, I don't see her slipping tongue.
No.
But it was just...
But it's weird.
They held lips for more than five Mississippis.
Odd. Yeah. And she goes in for like three kisses.
He went in two a couple of times.
Right.
So, I don't... Now, maybe there's a weird camaraderie when you're acting.
We're both on General Hospital together.
Yeah, like, all right, we're long hours, we're touchy-feely, we cuddle up on each other. I don't have coworkers that I rub up against and nor would I want to, but I can see maybe it's like you become comfortable with each other and it's just, oh, it's a little pecky on the lip.
I don't know. I mean, I think...
Because they look real comfortable together.
Right.
Really comfortable.
I think there would be a difference if she were 25 and not 19, just turned 19. You know what I mean?
Let's take a break. We're back.
So I want to know two things. Hi, by the way, this is Pop Culture Man Children. I'm Emilio Sparks. That's Mike Buongiorno. We're recording this wonderful episode that you are enjoying in Mike's basement of cool.
Subscribe
to this
share,
podcast, please.
Please
let people know.
Go ahead and give us a
five star review. Yeah,
write a nice review. We're available everywhere. Podcasts are
the whole nine.
Everywhere,
the whole nine. You can follow us on the Instagram as well.
Absolutely, at Pop Culture Man Children.
I like the Winnie the Pooh cookie jar.
Thanks.
Is that new or is that vintage?
That's newish. Yeah, that's not
okay.
Vintage.
Because judging by the handle, from me watching American Pickers, I've become an expert
now.
Certain things. That cookie jar, like the handles themselves, mm-hmm. on top of the cookie jar themselves, go for big money. Like, oh, that's going to be a great cookie jar because it has a skull on it or it has a honey pot. So,
okay, yeah.
Have you ever put cookies in it?
I believe at some point there were cookies in it. Not anymore. Do you have an obsession?
Well, I mean, restorative yoga, but not. I don't know if that's a real, like, obsession within pop culture.
Okay.
But I just like the fact that after, let's say, power yoga...
Yeah.
You have to start to decompress and you start to do what is called meditative breathing because your heart rate and all this stuff is raised and you're sweating and you're working out and then you go down. So I've been addicted to doing a real kick-ass hard yoga workout and then going to several restorative yoga workouts a week as well on top of doing everything else that I've been doing physically. I love it. I also just picked up books 4 and 5 of Sandman. I have not yet cracked those bad boys open, but I have them.
Okay.
And they're at the ready. I have a long trip I have to go to, so.
Where are you going?
I'm going to Phoenix. Well, by the time this... When is this coming out?
This is coming out a week from tomorrow.
I'll be in Phoenix.
What are you doing there?
Covering Royal Rumble.
Are you the new Mean Gene? Are you the replacement?
I would love to be Mean Gene, and that was something else that I've been watching as well. So I do have
What would your name be, though?
Emilio Sparks.
No, yeah. It's got to be like Mean Gene. Like, what rhymes with Emilio?
Nothing. Elio. Filio. Delio. So a wrestler could say, because I've been watching a ton of Mean Gene videos as well. It's been this thing. Like, that's why I do yoga. Watch Mean Gene videos.
I like the video of Hulk training him and him smoking a cigar at breakfast.
Yeah.
That's a fun one.
Well, all right, so how can we do this? What's the dealio, Emilio? Woo!
I like that.
Brother, I gotta tell ya. And then Ric Flair would come in and cut this That's amazing great. Promo. So the magic of Mean Gene Okerlund, which as a host, I've been obsessed with for years.
Yes, tell me about the magic.
Is he was just as popular as the professional wrestlers that he interviewed. And he wasn't even interviewing them how we would interview them.
No, I mean...
Or how we would...
He's setting them up to do these crazy promos.
It was totally part of... That wild circus that is professional wrestling, where it's this theater of make-believe, and he's just as important as this vital cog to get these performers over. It's not like Barbara Walters or Geraldo doing an investigative piece. He's part of the play. And he's being a really important moving piece of that.
Yeah.
I don't think Hulk Hogan gets as popular as Hulk Hogan got without Mean Gene Okerlund spearheading the questions that Vince McMahon and the other writers wanted Hulk Hogan to get through the agenda. I don't think it happens. I don't think Ric Flair, and I like Mean Gene's work went from AWA with Vern Gagne based out of Minnesota in the 70s, WWF in the 80s, and WCW in the late 90s into the early 2000s.
So what's Mean Gene's greatest moment?
I can't say that he has one because he has several. His promos with Jake the Snake Roberts are great. His promo with Ric Flair when Ric Flair wins the WWF Championship, being the first guy outside of the world that WWF created winning this championship. That was a huge deal in the 90s.
Uh-huh.
Ric Flair coming from WCW, which was the rival company.
Yeah.
Winning the pinnacle of the WWE, being the champion at that time was huge. So Ric Flair feeding off Mean Gene and doing this promo and Mean Gene saying, put that cigarette out. Like, it physically, like, there's this scene where, like, I don't know why, but Mean Gene's attention's not on Ric Flair. It's on somebody else smoking a cigarette.
Yeah.
You know? And then there's another one where he's talking to Randy Savage, and him and Miss Elizabeth have this moment, and they do this great thing, and it's this great
send-off. Is that the one with the candy?
Bro, yeah, man, it's fantastic. Anything. I think those are actually Mean Gene's best work, maybe where you're playing off somebody.
Yeah.
You're playing off Macho Man Randy Savage, and he's like throwing mini creamers that you used to get at
diners. Yeah. He's just going.
And he's going off. And then, like, Savage was just, I think, that entertaining.
Yeah.
But there were so many good characters where he controlled the ebb and the flow of the interview.
But where did he come from? He was a performer?
He was what he was doing. He was doing it in the AWA for Vern Gagne. Now, AWA had a small little television deal on ESPN. And then once WWF started to take over from regional to national, they Vince McMahon wanted a more polished person to do these interviews. So he hired Gene Okerlund. And then after that came Bobby Heenan. And, you know, they were magic together, Heenan and Okerlund. And then you needed that straight guy to have this feed off this larger-than-life character who can bring it all back in. So he would interview guys like Hulk Hogan, and he would pitch one or two questions.
Yeah.
And then they would do it.
Right.
And part of the great thing about Gene was it was never rehearsed with them.
I think it really worked. The optics of it worked that he was such a little guy.
Yeah.
And he's like looking up to them.
Yeah.
I think it's interesting that he's not like really good shape.
No. And he always came off older than what he actually was.
Yeah. I bet he. Yeah. Because he was bald and had a mustache.
Some of his stuff with Andre the Giant, I think, was really good when he was trying Andre's clothes.
Yeah.
So there was a lot. Like, Gene was the perfect, I don't want to say foil, but Gene was like the perfect individual to get these guys over. So much so that you remember Mean Gene now. Like, I'm a wrestling guy, so I'll remember guys like Lord Alfred Hayes and Gordon Soley, you know, Gorilla Monsoon. I'll remember these guys. You know, and now even the female anchors now, the Charlie Carusos, the Renee Youngs. You know, I'll remember them. But I don't think the casual fan, like, you don't know who Gorilla Monsoon is.
No, but I know who Mean Gene Okerlund is.
You know who Mean Gene Okerlund is. So he was just as popular.
Yeah.
Like, even during the whole rock and wrestling connection on MTV, Mean Gene was the anchor.
I remember Mean Gene from the film Repossessed with Linda Blair, which was a parody of The Exorcist.
See?
And in the end, she's fighting on the bed with the priest, and then you've got Mean Gene and Jesse Ventura, like, calling it.
See? You see what I mean? Like, you get it.
Yeah.
So, he's perfect to me. But he also signed a lifetime contract with the WWE as well. Like, that's the one thing a lot of people want to... that's the thing I love about that company is
they trap you in a lifetime.
Not that they trap you, because not everybody gets a lifetime contract. Let's not assume that.
No,
but a good, like, the ones that Vince trusts or love to work with get taken care of. From what I see from a fan's perspective, not everybody signs a lifetime contract with the WWE. Like, Mean Gene signed a lifetime contract with the WWE. You know, but he was also a broadcaster, though. Like, he was a radio guy. Like, he started out in, where was it? I think, like, Nebraska or something. Like he was a guy, and then he moved to Minnesota and did radio in Minnesota. So like
Minnesota,
he was like that was the dude. Like, you know, you would travel back then. I've gotten really lucky in my career where I started out in New York and I've stayed in New York, but you know, back then you'd have to move around. You were a nomad. And then he got into just professional wrestling and he started working with the AWA. And then he was a ring announcer, and then from there he went to the WWF in 84. And then he stayed with the WWF until like the 90s, man. He was great.
Did Mean Gene have a family?
Yeah. He had a great life. Yeah. I think 76 is too young to pass away.
Yeah.
But I mean, the guy has done, listen, for not being a pro wrestler, the guy did some extraordinary shit.
Yeah.
So I know, as somebody who would love to break into that type of on-camera work with professional wrestling, if you don't study Mean Gene Okerlund, you're doing it all wrong. Because there was a believability when he would come in and interview these guys. Now, I don't know if it just happens because I was young and I was a child and I was like, ooh, well, Mean Gene's saying some serious shit right now. Yeah. And then this guy's going to come on and say whatever. And it's like, well, wait a minute. And then he would always follow up with something.
Yeah.
Like the way it would close. And then they would say back to you. And then boom. And then the story would continue on. Everything has a place.
Yeah.
Which I like in professional. Like everything is supposed to fit. And you might not think it does. Or we question why this works.
Uh-huh.
But there's a specific reason why it works. So yeah. I mean, hours of Mean Gene videos when he passed away. Yeah.
So that's your obsession.
I have a lot going on obsession wise. Restorative yoga.
Sure.
Gentle flow, power flow, and Mean Gene Okerlund. Yeah.
I'm reading a book called Slayer. And it's by Kirsten White. And Kirsten White, I've already talked about it on the show because she wrote The Dark Descent of Elizabeth Frankenstein.
We talked about that extensively.
I loved. This book, Slayer, takes place in the world
of the rock band Slayer.
No, of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
This is right up your alley,
it's
pal.
A new book. It's exciting. It's thrilling. I'm loving it. I don't know why this hasn't come up more on the show, but I'm a huge Buffy fan. I love Buffy. You can see I've got a Buffy pop right here.
Oh, yes. Is that a Willow?
No, that's a Buffy.
No, you dingbat.
Oh, no, no. Oh, yeah, this is Willow. Yeah. Above it, I've got a little statue of Willow, Spike, and Buffy. And that's Mr. Pointy, which is her stake.
Her stake.
So this book takes place in the world. It's in the continuity of everything Buffy. So the comics and the show. So the main character is this girl who is named Nina. And she is the daughter of Merrick, who was Buffy's first watcher. The watcher is the person
who watches.
You're right. And he guides the Slayer and trains them. But the Slayer has the natural magical ability.
Is Nina a Slayer?
She turns out she is a Slayer.
So Nina the Vampire Slayer.
Right. But her conflict is that she doesn't want to be a Slayer.
She wants to be a Watcher.
She wants to be a Watcher. She was nerdy and didn't like physical activity and wanted to be a doctor and wanted to heal things. She actually hates Buffy. She never met Buffy. But as a watcher in the watcher community, and there's not a lot of them because a lot of them were killed in the last season, as a watcher, she very much despises Buffy because she goes, Buffy breaks things and I want to fix things. So to her great dismay, she is attacked by a hellhound, and without realizing, without knowing it, she jumped her
instincts kick
right,
in.
Her slayer, she's what you call a potential, which means she could be a Slayer. Her Slayer instinct comes out and she kills the Hellhound. And everyone's like, oh shit, Nina is a Slayer and she doesn't want to be a Slayer. But I'm about a quarter through it.
She's fighting her identity.
Right.
Yeah. The battle within.
Right. And her watcher is Leo, the boy she had a crush on her whole life. And he was there when that other bitch read Nina's poetry about him. So she's got, her and her watcher have sort of
sexual tension.
Well, she always loved him. I don't know if he loves her back. We'll see. I imagine that's what will happen.
Dude, you're leaving me hanging here.
I'm hanging too. The last thing I read was she was like, you know what? I'm going to be a Slayer, but I'm going to be a different kind of Slayer from Buffy.
You're killing me now. So when do you finish this book?
As soon as possible. I'm loving it.
I gotta know now. What happens between Nina and Leo?
I'm just making a guess from other YA books that I've read.
They fall in love.
I have a feeling they're going to fall in love. And she's going to accept her Slayerism. And she's going to be a good Slayer.
Her Slayerdom?
Yeah. See, the Watchers is a patriarchal bullshit organization that is like, they're there to mansplain Slayerism to the actual Slayers. Because Slayers are magical women who have matriarchal power.
Mm.
And they exist to fight the demons and the vampires. But Watchers came along and were like, we're going to take over and we're going to be in charge and you're going to work for us.
Typical.
Exactly. And Nina, she doesn't yet see the bullshit. Hopefully she does. I hope she comes around.
Are there female Watchers?
Yes, there are.
So Nina's listening to Leo because she loves Leo.
Right.
And so Leo could be an asshole and be mansplaining something that she already knows, and she probably knows it better than him.
Leo seems like a good guy right now. It's weird because they...
I think he seems like a piece of shit if he's not catching on. If the Watchers are supposed to watch, then he should know. I think my Slayer has a crush on me.
I think he does know, but out of respect for her, he... She also says, at one point in the book, another thing that Buffy did wrong was she was too personal with her Watchers, and I'm just going to treat this like business.
Mm, I like her.
Yeah. I think it's very interesting.
So maybe they don't get together.
That it takes place in the world of Buffy, but the character seems to dislike Buffy and want to be different from
maybe
Buffy.
Maybe she falls in love with a vampire.
Well, that's what Buffy did.
I didn't know.
Multiple times. What's weird
was
is...
Was that one of them who was played by the very handsome David Boreanaz?
Yes, he was Angel, who was Angelis. Who, you've never watched Buffy?
I've never seen a single second.
Oh my god.
Should I get into it?
Yes.
You have comic books and like literature on this?
I have some comics. I couldn't stick with the comics because the comics got way crazy.
Yeah.
But I love the series.
You have books? You have Buffy books?
There are Buffy books. I've never read a Buffy book until this one.
So I should watch Buffy.
You should watch the series Buffy.
So don't watch the movie.
The movie doesn't count in the canon because
it starts the whole thing.
Yeah, but the TV show was produced and showrun by Joss Whedon. And
you know how much you love Joss Whedon.
He wrote the movie, but he had no control over it. And the director of the movie, Fran, I forget her name, she did a bunch of things that he didn't want to do.
Yeah.
So he actually redid the story of the movie as a comic book.
So he created Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
Yeah.
How much money is he worth?
Let's see. I don't know because, you know, he's taking jobs like, do you want to take over for Zack Snyder to do Justice League? He only did one Avengers. I mean, he must be okay. There's something weird that came out with him like a year ago that his ex-wife was like, yeah, he used to hook up with everybody on the set of his shows. He's not this nice feminist guy everyone thinks he is.
The plot thickens.
Absolutely.
And there's always something.
There is. I've also heard that Sarah Michelle Gellar was not pleasant on the set.
I've heard that too.
Apparently, like, she didn't want to be there.
I've heard she's not pleasant on any set.
Yeah, Allison Hannigan was on, what's that fucking show with Andy Cohen where he makes you say secrets?
Oh, Watch What Happens Live.
Yeah.
I love that show.
He does that thing where he's like, tell me, like, he gets people to say shit.
He's amazing.
And he asked her something about it, and she was like, yeah, she didn't want to be there from the second season on. And that show was on for like 7-8 seasons.
She wasn't going to do anything else out of Michelle Gellar. I mean.
Yeah. Now she seems more cool that she's older. She seems to be cool with the fandom of it. I love it. A lot of people don't like the later years. The first 3 seasons, they're in high school, and that's the golden age.
Is it spooky?
Nah, not really.
Or is it more like campy?
It's more campy adventure-y.
Is this on Netflix or Hulu?
I believe it's on Netflix.
Oh, you're going to make me...
I watched on Netflix.
You're going to make me just go down a rabbit hole, aren't you? And I'm going to get obsessed with this, aren't you?
It's great. It's truly great.
All right.
I love the mythos of it.
Yeah.
I love the whole world of it. What's interesting about this book I'm reading now, though, is they've basically turned being a Watcher into, like, Hogwarts because they live in a castle and they go to classes and there aren't houses like there are in Hogwarts, but there are different lines. Like, she is a Merrick. Her father was Buffy's first Watcher. But then there's,
Slytherin and Hufflepuff.
Right. There's the Giles line, which is Giles was Buffy's watch it during the show. And then there's the Wyndham Pierce line, which was this other guy who was on Angel. So, like, a lot of the characters are related to characters you've seen in Buffy. It's fantastic.
All right. I'm a little lost with that, but all right.
You would love the show. It's charming. It's wonderful.
So I'm going to start it.
Yeah.
I have a couple of
Season
things that...
four is bad, but the first three seasons are gold. Season 5, 6, and 7, I like a lot of they're
but they're kind they, of like, off break kilter. Off and do spinoffs too. Didn't
there's
Willow,
an Angel show?
Angel got one. Didn't Willow get one?
No, there was an Angel show.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I'm very sure. Willow's had her own comics.
I wonder why How I Met Your Mother never made a Willow reference.
I think they might have at some point.
You think so?
I couldn't get into Angel. Some people love Angel just as much as they love Buffy. I've watched a good amount of Angel, but not the whole thing.
I gotta watch this now. I gotta watch this. Yeah, you're right. There was no Willow spinoff. I thought there was.
How dare you fucking...
Hey, pal, I don't know. Maybe you fucking... Maybe you're off, you know? Maybe, maybe you're not as...
How dare you?
Maybe you're not as astute as you think you are in this pop culture world.
Emilio, into every generation a slayer is born. One girl in all the world, a chosen one. She alone will wield the strength and skill to fight the vampires, demons, and the forces of darkness, to stop the spread of their evil and the swell of their number. She is the slayer. And this has been Pop Culture Man Children.
You're great. You're great.
Thank you, Mr. Emilio Sparks.
You're great. Follow us on the Instagram at Pop Culture Man Children. You can subscribe to this show several ways. We're on the big four, which are Spotify, Google Play, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. Give us a 5-star rating. Tell us, hey, Peter Tanzini.
Peter Tanzini, if you're out there, contact us.
We'd love to hear from
you. We'd love to hear you on the show. Yeah. Emilio, thanks.
I'm going to look around a little bit.
Sure.
Can we go bye-bye?
Yeah, let's go bye-bye. Bye-bye.